This is an AI-generated summary of Hansard for Wednesday, 22nd May, 1901. The House of Representatives. Alexander Poynton asked the Prime Minister about arrangements for distributing certain items. Protectionist Prime Minister Edmund Barton replied that the government should not engage in other matters while the address in reply remains pending, citing common parliamentary practice. Patrick Glynn objected that this was not a universal practice, and Barton maintained that it was the usual practice in the House of Commons and several states, preferring not to deviate without proper authorization. Joseph Cook of the Free Trade Party from Parramatta resumed the debate on the Governor-General's speech and criticized its vagueness and the lack of immediate plans. Barton interjected that every measure would pass if the opposition cooperated, but Cook countered that the opposition would naturally prioritize its own interests. He questioned the claim regarding universal penny postage, and while Barton explained that achieving this only required postal conference assent and funding, Cook, drawing on his postal experience, argued that it was not so simple. He then questioned what steps were being taken to protect Australian interests in the Pacific Islands, with Barton promising a full statement when possible. The Speaker reminded members to allow Cook to finish his speech before further replies. John Forrest interjected regarding Cook's remarks about the Transcontinental Railway. Cook asked, "Since when?" and stated that there was no urgency for the railway given the presence of the Navy, noting that improving boats could deliver mail more cost-effectively. Forrest replied that the railway had been promised as a means to join Federation, while Cook argued that no compact with Western Australia had been made to require building the railway as a condition for union membership. Cook then challenged an argument that the American Steel Trust supported protection, contending that such trusts exploited workers and led to vast wealth inequality. James McCall and William Groom interjected to correct Cook's interpretation, and further discussion ensued about issues such as child labour in England and the effects of industrial combinations. Samuel Marger and Barton remarked on whether the concern was with factory laws rather than fiscal policy. Amid the exchange, Cook referred to McCall as the rudest member of the House, prompting McCall to stress the need for honest debate, while the Speaker advised Cook to be more respectful. The debate then shifted to economic policy. Treasurer George Turner commented on procedural matters concerning documents, while Cook remarked on Victorian veracity, citing a newspaper report that supported his statements. Members discussed wealth diffusion in Great Britain, a New York loan, and home evictions, with comparisons drawn between conditions in America and Britain. Attention returned to the issue of tariffs. Barton argued that the tariff under discussion was higher than that in force in any other Australian state. Members including George Reed, Charles Kingston, and William Lyne exchanged views on protective tariff policy. Reed noted that a 5% rate had been mentioned, and the Speaker raised a point of order regarding Cook's manner of referring to another member. The Speaker suggested that Cook address others more respectfully. Richard Crouch commented on Cook's references to the Monroe Doctrine and Imperial Federation, as well as remarks about deafness. Cook countered that if Australia were to impose protective tariffs, then similar actions might be expected in other countries. Crouch replied that their success was due to protective measures such as a Factories Act, which was not common elsewhere. Cook retorted that the honourable member did not know all the details, a point with which Reid concurred. Further discussion arose over an incident in which the government requested that a man surrender one position in exchange for another. Barton defended the government's support for the appointment, calling the situation laughable. Reed and Lyne added further commentary on the matter. Cook then read aloud the Governor-General's comments regarding immigration from Asia and the South Sea Islands. He expressed concern about the impact on Queensland planters and sugar growers from the Tweed region, and moved that proposals for a White Australia be added to the address in reply. Barton inquired about the opposition leader's views, while an honourable member compared the proposal to to actions undertaken in Victoria. James Ronald of Southern Melbourne suggested it might be better to consent to a tariff that, although not fully approved, prevented commerce from remaining indefinitely stagnant while percentages were contested. John Christian Watson of Bland condemned the protectionist ideal for harming the living standards of the great mass of people and lamented that the opposition leader had not embraced direct taxation for Commonwealth finance. This observation prompted further interjections from Alfred Deakin, George Reed, and others who debated the exact nature of the proposals and the leadership's responsibilities. Alan McLean, a protectionist from Gippsland, voiced regret over the ministry's composition, remarking on an overrepresentation of lawyers and a lack of adequate rural representation. He criticised the Governor-General's speech for failing to offer support for new industries, while another member remarked that the situation bordered on bribery. The session concluded with additional regional remarks from members such as Patrick Glynn and James Fowler of Perth, who highlighted issues specific to Western Australia. William Wilkes moved for adjournment, a motion to which Alfred Deakin consented. The Senate. Senator Richard O'Connor, a protectionist from New South Wales and Vice President of the Executive Council, presented a letter from the Prime Minister enclosing a telegram from the Speaker of British Columbia congratulating the Commonwealth Parliament, along with the Prime Minister's response. He moved that the document be printed, and the motion was approved. Senator Edward Pulsford requested to postpone a question until the following Tuesday, which Senator O'Connor agreed to, citing the established practice of not answering questions during the address in reply debate. The debate then resumed on the address in reply to the Governor-General's speech, focusing on Senator Millen's amendment to prohibit further Kanaka labour importation. Senator O'Connor expressed regret at speaking before hearing from Queensland senators on Kanaka labour and reaffirmed the Senate's co-equal status with the House of Representatives, aside from its limitations over initiating expenditure and taxation. He outlined the government's intention to introduce measures in the Senate to facilitate more effective discussion and efficiency. Senator John Neild interjected, asserting that the Senate was not co-equal with the House of Representatives. Senator O'Connor explained that disputes between the houses would be resolved by established procedures, primarily when money was involved. Senator Anderson Dawson, a Labour senator from Queensland, questioned the absence of appeal to the Chief Justice in resolving such disputes. Senator O'Connor then detailed the federal government's initial tasks. These included unifying transferred services from six different states under a single executive and taking legislative steps to bring the Constitution into full operation. Key measures would involve imposing uniform customs regulations, streamlining treasury accounts, and consolidating postal and telegraph systems. The government also planned to establish the High Court as the arbiter between the Commonwealth and the states, and to form the Interstate Commission to ensure fair interstate trade. When Senator Millen asked whether the Interstate Commission measure would be introduced in the Senate, Senator O'Connor replied that it would not, as it involved appropriations. Turning to the subject of labour and immigration, Senator O'Connor discussed the principle of a white Australia while stressing the need to avoid unnecessary prejudice against existing interests. He maintained that while Kanaka labour should be abolished as quickly as practical, the process must be managed so as not to unduly disrupt industries that provided livelihoods. He expressed regret that the Postmaster General, better informed on the issue, was absent on ministerial duties. The debate also examined the effects of Kanaka labour on small farmers and central milling holdings. Senator Anderson Dawson interjected to highlight the plight of hundreds seeking casual work, while Senator Millen critiqued what he described as the negligent methods employed in the cultivation of cane. Senator O'Connor cited a report indicating that large sugar estates had been divided into smaller farms rented or sold to various cane growers, though there were disagreements about the report's scope. He provided figures claiming that 22,500 white men were employed in the sugar industry, with 13,500 as permanent hands and 9,000 as intermittent workers. Senator James Stewart remarked that casual employees could far outnumber permanent ones in some localities. Senator David Charleston interjected with a contrasting figure, prompting further discussion on wages and the fair treatment of both white and Kanaka laborers. Senator O'Connor then quoted the Governor General's speech regarding forthcoming legislation on the immigration of Asians and the gradual abolition of labor from the South Sea Islands. Senator Thomas Glassie observed that immigration restrictions should be gradual, emphasizing that approximately £5 million of capital was invested in the sugar industry. Senator O'Connor stressed that any changes must be implemented on fair terms for all parties. Senator Alexander Matheson suggested the measure amounted to a sliding scale, when Senator O'Connor explained that Asians referred to any native of Asia. He reassured that the government would bring the appropriate measures to the House without halting individual operations. He also accused Senator Millen of acting irresponsibly. Senator James Stewart inquired about the government's proposals, and Senator O'Connor replied that the measures should have been evident from his earlier remarks. The discussion linked employment and capital investment in the sugar industry with wider fiscal issues. Senator Henry Dobson from Tasmania clarified that, under an amendment of the Pacific Island Labourers Act 1880, re-employment for certain labourers was addressed. He stated that the underlying principle was to exclude all alien coloured labour. Senator O'Connor concurred, asking whether the policy was to exclude aliens only, or if an additional excise duty was required. The government was committed to not making a decision unless there was unanimous support for a resolution. Senator Gregor McGregor then called for a more respectful tone among representatives and stressed that his Labour Party would adhere strictly to their policy. He notably said, "We are never afraid of the whip. We have been too well acquainted with bullocks for that." He discussed the rights to franchise and contrasted the representation of the people within differing legislative bodies, urging that pressing questions be given immediate attention. Senator McGregor argued that the railways and navigable rivers across the Commonwealth should come under federal control and criticized the government's vague policy on coloured labour. He warned that without proper attention, industries such as furniture manufacturing, agriculture, and metalworks might suffer, asserting that protection was necessary not solely for revenue raising, but also as encouragement for domestic industry. Senator James Walker from New South Wales expressed agreement with Senator Dobson, while Senator William Higgs interjected to stress his independent views. The debate then shifted briefly to discussions about railway expansion and defence. Senator McGregor remarked, "The Almighty has done that," as part of the broader dialogue on national defence. Senator Alexander Matheson congratulated Senator Playford on his clear protectionist policy and questioned whether free traders who praised it were true to their principles. Senator McGregor responded by emphasizing that his opposition was based on the ineffectiveness of the proposed amendment. The discussion later turned to issues of railroads and infrastructure. Senator O'Connor questioned whether the government's commitments extended to building essential railways, with historical references recalled by members from Western Australia. Senator Matheson concluded his remarks by emphasizing the strategic importance of defense lines, arguing that if the Commonwealth were to assume overall defense responsibility, certain lines were critical to the national defense system. Senator Henry Dobson from Tasmania then reflected on the work the Senate would soon face under the federal constitution. He recalled having written to the Prime Minister, urging that a number of bills be ready to secure the Senate's rightful share of legislative initiatives. He quoted Sir Francis Hincks on the dangers of hastily establishing a constitution and lamented the premature onset of party politics following the Prime Minister's swearing in. The debate then briefly touched on tariff measures and the discouragement felt by the states before returning to topics including old age and Kanaka labour. Senator Anderson Dawson raised a point of order concerning whether discussion on the general theme of the address in reply was permitted while an amendment was under consideration. The president confirmed that such discussions were allowed and provided an explanation of the voting process. Senator Miles Smith from Western Australia argued that the government should halt the wholesale introduction of Kanaka labour and adopt a more defined policy on the matter. He stressed that the great national question of immigration and industry was being treated like a minor commercial transaction. He maintained that while federation had been achieved in letter, its spirit would remain elusive until effective communication between the Commonwealth and the states was established. Senator O'Connor underscored Australia's vastness as a continent with a white population of about 4 million and highlighted the challenges posed by surrounding alien races. Finally, Senator Millen moved that, at its rising, the Senate adjourn until 2:30 tomorrow. After a brief discussion regarding finishing the debate by the following evening, the adjournment was set at 2:30 p.m. and agreed upon. Senator McGregor remarked on the importance of independence and mentioned his pressing morning engagements. Senator Richard O'Connor then moved that the Senate adjourn for the day. The day's proceedings concluded with brief remarks regarding the arrangements for members' club facilities and the early voting process for the next day. This has been a LaunchLab production. LaunchLab.com.au